Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is The Diary. This is your host, Stacey Johnson, and I'm here with Ray on Sunday, March 28th. Hey, Ray.
Hey.
We are excited to be here today. I'm a little depressed, but we're going to have a good show because nothing is more important to me than spending some knowledge, especially by my black people, and that's what we've been doing. That's what we'll continue doing. It was a very beautiful day here in Sacramento, wasn't it? Is it kind of cloudy now, but it was very beautiful.
It's still gorgeous.
It was even more beautiful yesterday.
Yesterday.
It's a different gorgeous. But yes, thank you for joining us today. It's going to be an exciting day. Today we're going to talk about continue with the common destiny. We're going to talk about and continue with the takeover of black music, which makes me so depressed. Even the Common Destiny stuff makes me depressed. So we're going to talk about, you know, the behavior, the bad, very bad behavior of the Republican Party. And a bunch of other things, you know, that I kind of blurred and stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about the week. And then also I want to talk about, you know, the awards that we win as black people in the different industries.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my daughter and I were having a very intelligent, wonderful conversation about the things that black people are rewarded for and why. And she was like, you know, why would that girl on Precious win an award? Why? You know, and my thing and her thing is, you know, the very worst about us is always the thing we get the award for. All the wonderful movies Denzel Washington did,
mm-hmm.
and portrayal of wonderful people, especially significant to the black community. What does he win his award for? Acting like a nigga. So why? Why is that? But I know why. But you know what? It's dead and it's old. And it's my hope that black people wake the hell up and realize it as a race of people. You know, a lot of things, you know, I think about it. I'm a thinker and I thank God for that. And I think God put me here for a particular reason, had me born at a particular time and have me suffer through certain things for a particular reason. And right now in America, it's a sad, sad state of affairs for black people. And the saddest part about it is that the majority of black people don't even realize it. You know, don't even realize it. It's not a concern as long as everything's cool with them. And then a lot of us, everything's not cool. But that's cool, too, for things not to be cool. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how it's always been. So
yeah.
The common destiny thing is kind of, it looks at where we were back then, the period of time in America when we did prosper,
mm-hmm.
and how and why when that stopped and why that stopped and where we're at today. And there's a lot of the things that this report, and I told you, you know, it was written in early 90s, late 90s, same thing today. You know, a lot of the same things are going on today. So, you know, that's what we're going to talk about. So let's get going. I mean, let's get going. Let me talk about the behavior of the Republican Party.
Oh, boo, boo, boo. Like I said, not the good kind of boo.
Yeah.
Bad kind of.
Oh, not like he's your boo. Like, right.
Not like
yeah.
that.
Right.
Like
yeah. boo. Okay.
Yeah. Like boo.
You know, and just, I mean, the spitting on the black people, calling them the N-word, and then just the leadership alone, yelling out, and it's just, it's sad. It's something that's very sad, and it takes me to a place where, you know, I wondered, and I tweeted all week, I'm like, I wonder if this is what my parents felt like back in 64
mm-hmm.
and 65, you know, wondering if they're going to have the right to do this, or their child going to grow up with the right, some rights.
Absolutely.
You know, it is terrible.
Absolutely. And it is so true, too, because, you know, a couple of the congressmen were back there, you know, in the 60s, and they said that's what it felt like.
Right. Some of the black ones,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. They were talking about how it just felt exactly the same, and they were just sort of like flashbacks.
But the reason, the sad part is that it is the same 45 years later.
I know.
That it is the same. And for some strange reason, we've turned this healthcare issue into some type of black-white issue.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, the black people walk through. Are there no black Republicans?
There are like two, I think.
There's two?
Well, there's Michael Steele, and he is the head of the Republican Party.
Okay.
So,
two, though?
And I'm not sure. I think there is one black congressman that's Republican, but I will research that.
Okay, yeah, because
okay.
I'm thinking.
I should know that, too. Exactly.
You know, it's just a sad, it's very sad that, you know, first of all, that they're allowing themselves to act like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not what's good for the people. And I'm watching some of them today, you know, Tea Party people showing up. You know, they're not listening to us. Listening to who? What are you saying? And what is it that we're not listening to? But the saddest part, and the part that I really want to emphasize,
mm-hmm.
is that when you look through all of this, okay, and all the phone calls and the voicemails that were left,
mm-hmm.
but I had to say there was a brother from somewhere. Did you hear the one the brother left?
No.
And I was like, yes, somebody black cares besides me. They showed his, they played his voicemail. The Republican Party, y'all ain't nothing but a bunch of racists.
Oh,
said they need to change your name to the fucking racist party. And I was cracking up.
That's great.
But you know,
great.
I'm like, yeah, all right, somebody black that cares. But
exactly, you know, because Representative John Lewis was a Georgia congressman. He's a Georgia congressman that was shouted down this weekend, and he was almost beaten to death during an Alabama march in the 1960s. This is a man who has lived through something unbelievable, you know, and really felt and saw hate in the first row.
Right, but we are in 2000
and that's what he's saying. He's saying he was one of the people that they interviewed for
the article. And the brother said, yeah, because if you would have spit on me, man, I would have shot you in your face with my 9mm.
Whoa.
And I'm like, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, because there's no reason for it.
There is absolutely.
Okay. Now, what I want to emphasize, though, the thing that I want to emphasize before I go on, is that, okay, why it appears to be a black-white issue.
No.
Okay, well, it appears to be. Okay. Okay, you don't think so, mm-hmm. but it appears to be because why are the black people getting spit on by white people?
No. Definitely.
How come all the Democrats aren't getting spit on?
No, you're right. But you're talking about, now I see what you were saying, the Republicans are making it a black-white issue.
Why is it?
No, they're using healthcare to do
why
ugly racism.
Why? Yeah, exactly.
I don't understand.
Okay, and another thing that pisses me off. Okay, you say there's only two black people on the Republican
side. I didn't say that.
Oh, there may be more. Okay. We know there's at least two. But my thing that bothers me the most. Is that's why black people have to get their shit together.
Mm-hmm.
From bottom, the poor Shaquandas and the projects all over the country,
mm-hmm.
to Barack Obama. Black people have to get their shit together. Because if you look over, you know, there's no, like, other races of people that stood up for us and said, you know what, we're the National Society of Latino, blah, 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 and we're minorities too, and we think that this is reprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any other race of people standing up for the black people getting spit on?
No, I don't.
And that's goddamn shame.
Except for the white legislators. That
they're not people of color. I'm saying people of color.
Right. Oh, like
people of color. You know what I mean?
No, I don't. I haven't.
Now, what if it was only the Hispanics that were getting spit on? How many Hispanic leaders from every corner of the face of the fucking earth would show up and say this is wrong.
Right.
What's wrong with that? No, it's not right.
Yeah.
No, you see what I'm saying? I'm right, but that's wrong that I'm right.
Right.
That's wrong that I'm right.
It is very wrong. Do we see black leaders standing up for the Hispanic causes either?
Where are they spitting on Hispanics?
Oh, God, are you kidding
me? Where? Tell me.
It's the opposite.
Tell me. I saw them spitting on black people last weekend. Where are they spitting on Hispanics?
They're shooting.
No, they shoot black people too.
They're shooting them at the border.
They're shooting us too. Down the street.
I'm not saying.
I'm talking about this political bullshit where everybody's supposed to be together.
Right.
This is a democracy.
And
you have the right to pick and choose as you want to. It's like white people have lost their minds because they see the last bit of power that they have, which is control over the regular motherfuckers that walk the face of the earth, they're losing it. So they've lost their minds. But what that really bothers me the most about America, mm-hmm. where are the Hispanics standing up and saying, don't spit on the black people? I don't care if we did it, because they're not being spit on. And if they don't need black people to stand up for them. You see what I'm saying? Hispanics don't need black people to stand up for them. They stand up for their damn self. Asians don't need black people to stand up for them. They stand up for themselves. Who the fuck stands up for black people?
Why don't black
Nobody. People? That's why we're here.
Okay, exactly. But
that's why, and that's why
you're mad at the Hispanics.
I'm not mad at them. Who says I'm mad at them?
I'm just saying.
My point is, I'm mad at black people.
Right.
Nobody says I'm mad. Don't put that out there, because I'm not. I respect them because they stick together.
Right.
I respect every race.
I wanted to make.
I didn't say that.
No, I know.
Dumb, ignorant people will imply that. But no, I didn't say that.
I know you didn't. That's why I wanted
my
to
My thing is,
to make
my
very
thing
clear
is,
that you didn't.
Black
that.
People need to get their shit together
yes.
from top to bottom. When it starts to be every man for his fucking self, guess what? Black people are going to be the ones with their asses out.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't stick together at home, in the streets, in the government, nowhere.
Right on.
And nobody going to stick up for us.
That's so true.
So we need to get our shit together. This is the diary. I'm going to take a minute and get my shit together while I play the love doctor.
Right on.
That was the Love Doctor, and this is your Love Doctor, Stacey Johnson, the Director of the Association of African American Single Mothers. I think I got my stuff together.
Oh, you're a doctor now.
Yeah, I'm a doctor. I've graduated to doctor status.
There you go.
Okay. I can do that. And today we are talking about a common destiny. We're talking about the takeover of black music. We're talking about a whole bunch of stuff, and you know, I'm just, I'm passionate about being
yes.
black, you know, and I hate seeing the worst of us glorified.
Yes.
It's like, and I'm going to go over real quickly, you know, my daughter and I had a good conversation. It's like, you know, why did she win? You know, it's like, why did she win? Precious
Victory, you're talking about what's after
you know, I don't know, but I want some positive portrayal of black people to win an award. Just like I said with Denzel, you know, the only award that they gave him was when he acted like a crooked cop and not at all one of his best performances. And it's just a shame. That's how we portray it. And that's that brainwashed stuff. People need to go read that book. So read that book, because it's so cool in America to look down on the black person. It's so cool. It's just like normal. It's a normal thing, and, you know, we don't expect anything else. you know, and then we as black professionals, black wealthy people, we perpetuate the stuff. I mean, the simple fact that Oprah took her happy ass to Africa when she's from Chicago, she got to show that's where she got her money. There's plenty of ghettos in Chicago
exactly.
that would have welcomed her and not
that
ended up
so
suing
true.
Her dumb ass, you know, years later.
They,
you know what I mean? Just like Russell Simmons, you know, the music takeover, you know, that's the, that they'll let that go. But, you know, where is the good music that we were brought up with? Where is that good music?
Right.
They stopped playing that because it made us look too good.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's just ridiculous. So now we're going to talk about a common destiny, and what we're going to go over right now is the results of that determinants of black status. And last week we stated that stagnation of the U.S. economy since 1973, which particularly hurt blacks, so... that's where we were last week, mm-hmm. is that during the 50s and 60s, during the civil rights movement and the economy, which was at a boom status, black people prospered for those two reasons alone. But once the economy slowed down, so did our progress pretty much. So, but they say there are other factors that determine black status. One, organizational resistance to change, and Lord knows we know that. If you work in corporate America, you know organizational resistance to change, and you're a damn fool if you say it doesn't exist.
And what can you just say, like, something really short that explains what that is? Because I've never worked in
like me, working in the insurance industry, good old boy, right?
Okay.
You know, organizational, there'll never be really anybody at the top level making any major decision.
Okay.
Because that's not the way we do it in white America and in the business world. We just don't do it that way. Okay, that's one. Mm-hmm. And then two, individual resistance to change. So even if you have these so-called standards that your company implements, that don't mean you got to hire me. You know what I mean?
Oh, I see.
You know what I'm saying? Just like that commercial that the black guy came in and they just balled up his resume, threw it in the trash.
Wow.
So, you know, the good old racist, that's the individual resistance to change.
Yeah.
I don't care what my company says. I'm going to do whatever's in my power to prevent this shit from happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So those are the things that took place after the economy was stagnant. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If organizations put in that, you know, basically practice racist standards, black people ain't going nowhere. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So barriers and disadvantages persist in blocking black advancement. And three such barriers, right? Residential segregation, and we know what that means pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Indirect discrimination, and, you know, just practicing standards where you just discriminate without basically, you know, being straight up with it, like they used to be able to get away with before the laws had changed.
Mm-hmm.
And then exclusion from social networks, essential for success or for full access to economic and educational opportunity. So blacks had these same barriers in the past, but during the 60s, blacks excelled, like I said, because the economy was rapidly growing, so black success was growing.
Okay. Yeah.
And policy also was put in place that made the large difference in the opportunity, because policy was in place now, so all that affirmative action stuff. Barack Obama, right? Wasn't he a recipient of the real affirmative action when it was actually in place and actually working?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the Harvard brothers, that what's his name, Bill Thomas Gates, Henry Thomas Gates or whatever.
My father.
Okay, your father, right.
He was of one.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
They had to have one.
You know what I'm saying? So back in those days, when because of those reasons and because the economy was good, it was good for black people.
Yeah.
You know, for some black people, not all black people. Those that took advantage of it. For instance, my parents, who moved out of the South, raised kids in the free West in California and taught us these things, get the education,
uh-huh.
do all of that. You know what I mean? So, yeah, my family prospered. But then again, this is where we stopped, though. And this, we stopped in 1970s. We stopped in the 80s because the economy shrunk, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're saying that blacks prospered because of those economic situations that were happening in America.
Okay.
The economy was good, policies in place, affirmative action, black men becoming doctors and lawyers back in the day was really important, because back in those days,
mm-hmm.
it was really important to black people that they attained that same status as white people.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
To my parents, it was very important that I got a degree and was able to do the same things as a white girl now 45 years old would be able to do.
Okay.
So it was very important to our parents, like your parents, mm-hmm. that we got our education because it was important. And on top of that, they're saying that black initiatives and identities have increasingly played primary roles in bringing about changes. What that means is black initiatives. Black Initiative, the Black Panther Party.
Okay, so like mobilizing.
Doing something.
Right.
And that's pretty much the only one I know that made a real impact. You know what I'm saying? So they're saying we also did well because we had black initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
We had black people out there saying, like Martin Luther King, no, we're not going to stand for it. You know, you see what I'm saying? So that's why we prospered. In 70s, 73, it all stopped. The economy gets all screwed up. There are no black initiatives. Those that are us, those of us that are doing well, just continue to do well.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us that didn't get in on the first boom, because we black people only have one boom.
Right.
That was it. They missed out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There's no more boom. So in order to get those things back, we have to, first of all, I think, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
those black initiatives have to get back in and actually be working, and not these fake-ass churches
mm-hmm.
that are only open from 10 to 6 on Sunday. That's not a black initiative. Okay, and you say, yo, boo, Jesse got something going on, so we're going to check. But we need to have something that's actually working.
Oh, you know what? I can add to something about Jesse Jackson's initiative.
Yeah.
Later when you were
no
ready to
talk about that. So now so we went over that. So back in those days, and this is very important, black people,
mm-hmm.
especially young people that have kids, or even all black people, young people that have kids, black people that don't have a education or a highly marketable skill,
mm-hmm.
this is important. This what I'm about to say is very important. Blacks back then wanted to achieve as high academic levels as whites. Let me say it again. Back then, back when I was born,
mm-hmm.
thank God for back then and
mm-hmm.
people that said, no, we want, if we're fighting for equal rights, damn it, we're going to go to school and we're going to get those things just like, we're not just fighting to get the law passed.
Right.
We didn't fight just to get health care passed. We fought so we can go buy insurance tomorrow. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Okay, so back then, once again, I'm going to repeat this probably till I'm blue in the face. Back then, okay, not necessarily today, and we know that, blacks wanted to achieve as high academic levels as whites, okay? Ain't nothing wrong with that, okay? Why do you think Asians, they above all of them, okay? They want to be better than everybody, and they've done it, okay? We don't want to be better than anybody, and we've done it. Blacks have not succeeded. Blacks who have not succeeded live in environments in which social conditions and individual behavior patterns screw them up. So that's pretty much where we like the HIV. You know we got, but we still don't use a condom. We know our kids are stupid, but we still don't make them go to school.
Yeah, those are great examples.
You know,
I like it. No, seriously, very colorful.
Okay,
exactly. Examples that I think work well to explain, because I was just going to ask you.
Right.
What would you compare that to?
Well, you got that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it.
All right. I like it, too. Now, as of 1987, one half of all black families with children in the home was managed by the woman alone.
Mm-hmm.
So half of all black families with children in 1987 were single-parent households handled by women alone. 59% live below the poverty line. Okay.
Wow.
They have they have higher rates of dependence on family assistance.
Mm-hmm.
They live in areas with high percentage of families with similar circumstances. So everybody that's poor, living in them broke-ass apartments over on blah, 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 and blah, 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 and they just think that's the way it is. And then on top of it, why do these conditions persist is what they're saying. And it points out a few reasons why. One, discrimination plays an important role, period. Even without discrimination, there are fewer opportunities for blacks. Blacks in poor environments see little payoff from working for academic achievement. Those in poorly staffed, dilapidated schools, populated with underachieving students can easily fall into a trap of perceiving the pursuit of academic excellence is a poor investment. Inequalities in economic status, to a large extent, causes and interacts with other features to maintain overall black-white differences in status. That's everything. This was written in 90-something.
Mm-hmm.
You would think it was written yesterday.
Yeah, that's very so true.
There's nothing anybody did for any of our kids. We're lucky you and me have kids that are getting a diploma this June. We're very lucky. And my thing was, just get out. Okay? And that's part of this. Underachieving, just get out, baby. Because they're not teaching you shit. They're not trying to. And then I try to teach you something. Mommy, you're not a Black History major. Yeah, I am. When it comes to you, yes, I am.
Right.
Okay? I'm everything you need because the school ain't nothing that you need. They don't have nothing for you. So...
That is so true.
I mean,
especially
they
what came to light about those Texas.
We'll talk about that real quick towards the end. We'll talk about how Texas is controlling all the those good fellas are controlling what our kids. But they're not learning nothing. They said the kids don't even take the books home.
Right.
I believe it.
Right.
I believe it. So, you know.
I agree.
These are the things that were happening with us. So, basically, in a nutshell, what this is saying. As long as our economic base is all screwed up, we're always going to fall behind white people and everybody else, period. Unless Black people figure out a way to move forward economically. And there are all kind of ways, and it always starts. If you're young, go to school. If you're old, try to become an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
There's something out there. I'll teach you how to market anything. Mm-hmm. I see the dumbest shit sold on the Internet, and those people are making money. But you just got to know how to do it.
There's another workshop for you.
You know what I'm saying?
I think you should hold a couple of different workshops.
Oh, God.
People how to start a bit and how to do it.
I want to teach the people how to stop being sorry.
Their financial stuff, because you're really savvy with that. You need to share it because there's a lot of people.
Black people and economic education, the two E's for Black people.
Do you have
education?
Mothers that would empower just to be able to know what they should do their money.
We're going to talk about trying to empower single mothers because
that's where we need to, I think, act.
Okay.
Because they're the smartest element there.
Sometimes. Well, you know what? You're talking about yourself. You are not talking about the majority of single mothers.
To be the
well, we all have potential.
Because they run a lot of it on instinct.
We all have potential.
I'm done.
And that's what we want to tap into. All of us have potential. But I think more in particularly, Black people have a lot of potential because, you know, I'm kind of biased. I think we are special people. So I'm going to play some and take a little break. This is a diary. It's always talking about what Black people need, what we've been through. And if you don't know where you've been, Black people, that's why we all screwed up, because we don't appreciate where we've been, and we ain't going nowhere but down. So I don't care who you are unless we all come up.
Yes.
None of us are coming up. So this is a diary. We're going to take a break. I'm going to play all the way because I love
you.
All the way. Okay, we'll be back.
Great.
Okay.
Bye. cold like June. Your thoughts with me and you ain't feeling the gloom. You thinking the ways that you can introduce soon. I gather my approach while I've been debonair. Calm and collect right amount of stare. Casually glance when the time is right. My eyes communicate that it's on tonight. I was hoping you and me could take that one-on-one vibe. At dawn's top down and we feeling alive. My heart disappears as we're shut and jive. I want to head to environments when we describe. I see flames in your eyes that coincide with my thinking. Solid gaze back, not the one of us swinging. You can't keep passion or chemistry. I think we got both. Take a ride with me.
That was All the Way. This is your host, Stacey Johnson. This is The Diary every Sunday from 3 to 4 on Blog Talk Radio. We are the talk show for the Association of African American Single Mothers. And me and Ray are here every Sunday just trying to mix it up. And this is so much fun for me because I just love studying Black history and I love making people aware because there's so much I don't know, so I know there's a lot that other people don't know, and I love sharing it. So
it's like learning together.
It's learning together and knowing that, you know, we must be something else because everybody out to damn get us. I don't understand it. You know, we must first they needed us because we were big and strong.
No, now they
you know
didn't
saying?
Realize that we could have a Black president.
Right. Yeah, that people have lost their damn mind.
They thought that they had control as long as that didn't happen. Opened the floodgate for a lot of people.
Crazy, crazy people.
Yeah.
And let me make you understand, people, slavery ain't just going out and you having to pick the cotton at 5 in the morning or by moonlight and sunlight.
It's slavery of the mind.
It's slavery of the mind. It's slavery of
the spirit.
Of who you are. It's slavery in a whole bunch of ways. Going to work sometimes, if you ain't happy, figure it out. You can have whatever it is you set your mind to. And that's what I know so. I wouldn't be here today as a single mother raising three kids on my own. I know so without a shadow of a doubt.
Well, see that,
and I'm no different than anybody else out there.
I think more people need to hear that, kind of like a mantra.
Oh, my God.
They need to play it
You can do. My, everybody, Michael Jackson, everybody became the people that they became because they put their mind to it.
I know. We can be their mantra if they play The Diary every Sunday and listen to us.
Right. Giving them hope.
We can have, like, spirit. We can be the wind beneath their wings.
Exactly. And how you doing? Okay. I like that. Yes, you're right. I mean, that is why we care.
That's why we care. Give out the phone number.
Yeah, the phone number.
Would love to call and talk to us.
I would hope so. And the phone number is 917-889-9946. And that never changes. Same number all the time. But as you can tell, we don't need people to call to make the show rock.
We know.
We run out of time all the time. Anyway.
I know. We both love to talk.
Right.
You know, you always say, I'm really talkative. You're just as talkative.
Yeah, somebody told me that, too. That's very true. Okay. Now, major companies manipulate and control the black music, part one. But we're going to try to get through the whole thing before the end of the show.
Okay.
And, you know, and focus on the fact that, you know, we must be some strong folks because no matter what we put our hands on, it's success. And so, you know, this is a trip. Okay, let's go. Story begins, and I'm going to go backwards a little bit. So just
and
in case.
The talent.
The story begins in the 1980s with the sale of Motown Records, a once black-owned company, to MCA Records and Boston Ventures Limited Partnership. The African-American community felt a great loss of one of its cherished institutions. Around that same period, it seemed like war had been declared against the survival of black-owned record companies. Solar Records was involved in a suit, countersuit, with Warner Brothers Records for control of its assets. Sussex Records, a once fast-growing black-owned record company, was forced to cease doing business for tax reasons. Philadelphia International Records, a quality black-owned record company, was under the distribution control, which is a lifeline to its financial survival, of CBS Records, also known as Columbia Records. These are mammoth events, virtually placing the dominance of recorded black music in the hands of major record companies. The hidden agenda may have been the closing of all doorways towards the development of full-service production, manufacturing, distribution, black-owned record companies in America. Had this occurred, and improbable as it seems today, it is possible that black record companies would have ultimately controlled a larger or equal percentage of the music business. We're talking the whole music business, not just black music.
Right.
So keep that in mind. The music,
like true mogul.
Yeah, the business, not just
true
rap, not ghetto, the business. Okay, here we go. Like I want to give somebody the business. But the business, of course, business, competing with major record companies. It was told to this person by Dave Parker, oldest promotion man in the business that, at that time, that of the $55 billion made in 1987 by CBS Records, approximately 80% was from black music.
Wow.
Black-owned record companies were obviously seen as a potential threat to the control of the music market.
Mm-hmm.
The battle to control market share can best be understood by looking into the case of Stax Records. In the 1970s, it was the largest, most diverse black-owned record company in the music industry. Stax artist roster includes such stars as Isaac Hayes, Otis Redding, Al Green, Rufus, and Carlin.
Oh, my Thomas. God. Can you believe that?
The Staple Singers, Booker T, and the BMGs, and more. It also had a jazz label, blues label, gospel label, we read this last week, and even a comedy label where such artists as Bill Cosby, Richard Pryor, and Jackie Moms, maybe. And I used to run out and hide and go listen to Mom's Baby. She was cussing and still. I was like 10 years old. My parents had all of that. I remember that. She wore a hat. I remember that. Launch their careers. This era paralleled the turbulent 60s with the social, cultural, and political musical climate being fueled by black consciousness music. See, that black intervention. See, blacks was hot.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying? Our music was hot.
Yes.
We had black intervention. See, them black movements. We was hot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. This era was paralleled by the turbulent 60s, the social, culture, political, and musical climate, being fueled by the black consciousness music and the Vietnam peace movement. The financial profits generated by black recording artists and the phenomenal success of black films and soundtracks caused black entertainment businesses to be closely monitored. Dun, 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 dun. Here we go. It's going down. Stax Records received several peaks with the overwhelming success of Watt Stax, a live concert of Stax artists in the Los Angeles Coliseum. My folks probably remember that.
What?
Attracted some 112,000 black people without incident. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
It produced a film of the same event that was seen worldwide, and it was the first to get into the revolutionary technique at the time, video production. The success continued when Isaac Hayes, one of Stax's top artists, won an Oscar for Best Original Film Score.
Damn right. I remember my parents being so excited about that. I remember that. They had a Shaft
party. But I'm talking about Shaft. We can get it. Shoot, don't mess with Shaft. Shaft was cool. Okay, this was during a time when black record companies, Stax, Sussex, Motown, had the lion's share of black artists. The major record companies, not to be left behind, sat up to notice, determined to find a way to control the lucrative black music market. CBS Records took an aggressive lead by hiring Logan Westbrooks, a pioneer in black music marketing, to maximize their profit margin in black music. Okay?
Wow.
Okay, here we go. When Westbrooks joined CBS, he was unhappy with the way records of black artists were being marketed. There was a vice president of pop promotion, and the person that headed the black music division would report to that individual. My position was that we should have a complete and separate marketing division reporting directly to the vice president of marketing, which is the same way that the white side was structured.
Isn't that ridiculous?
That also was on the premise that CBS realized that the black market is a separate entity and should be approached from a black marketing standpoint as opposed to the way it had been done in the past. They bought it. Bruce Lundvall, former vice president of marketing, CBS Records, and past president of Manhattan Records, was in complete agreement with it. Also, at that particular time, they had recently made a deal with Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff from Philadelphia International Records. They had not been successful with the product Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff were giving them. Gamble and Huff's position was, We were giving you a good product, and you were blowing it because you don't know how to market it. What you need is some black individual up there that specializes in black music to go after that market. In order to approach this situation scientifically, CBS Records commissioned the Harvard University Business School to do a study. Westbrook served as the coordinator. The title of the study was A Study of the Soul of Music Environment prepared by Columbia Records Group. The Harvard team was officially titled the Columbia Records Project Group. In his book, The Anatomy of a Record Company, How to Survive the Record Business, Westbrook outlined some of the key rationales for the study. First, CBS wanted to determine the profit potential, of course, so they would not forfeit any market share. Second, CBS wanted to examine the crossover potential, crossover indicating, right, we know that, crossing over from the soul chart to the pop chart in the music industry trade magazine, or as it's described, from the black chart to the white chart. Charts contribute heavily to the music being played on radio. In 1972, when the study was conducted, CBS Records had only two acts they felt could effectively penetrate the black market, Sly Stone and Santana. The following recommendations were suggested to correct this. Purchase already developed talent rosters from companies like Philadelphia International Records, Stax Records, revive and refresh proven talents, Isley Brothers, OJs, Lou Rawls, take breaking groups and break them bigger, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Hell, Melvin and the Blue Notes, buy into breaking trends, jazz fusion, through Miles Davis and his alumni, Weather Report, Headhunters, and who? Man, somebody. Okay, orchestra, and perpetuate, and this is the killer, and this is what me and my daughter were talking about, and perpetuate success, Michael Jackson.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the results of the study were quite striking. For instance, CBS Records developed a black music marketing division. Let's see where the results were quite striking. For instance, CBS Records developed a black music marketing division that was copied through the industry by every major record company doing business in black music. CBS increased its artist roster from two progressive black-oriented acts in 1972 to 125. Wow. Did you hear that?
Say it again.
From here, you read it. You go from there.
What?
Right here.
From where?
CBS.
Okay.
CBS increased its artist roster from two progressive black-oriented acts in 1972 to 125 in 1980, the largest roster of black artists in the industry.
Right. Wow. Michael Jackson broke all previous sales records with his album Thriller, anticipating another big one with his next album, Bad.
Right.
At that time, he was the number one music artist entertainer in the world. The bittersweet side of this institutionalized black popular music, but it caused other forms of music, blues, jazz, and folk music, to suffer virtual elimination on most radio playlists and concert bills.
Okay, leave till there, and then I'm going to take
okay.
over.
According to the study, it created more jobs for blacks, a point that must be clarified. Those dozens of blacks were employed to capitalize on this newfound market. If the discontinued black-owned record companies had survived, hundreds of blacks would have been employed. Ironically, Clive Davis, president of CBS Records during the time of the study, denies ever having used it. I went ahead on creative feel, intuitive reasoning, and common sense, not because I had any study or blueprint. I never read that study, I've never seen it, and I've certainly never used it as a blueprint.
Right.
The study did not form the basis for any movie that I made, Westbrook. According to Verdeen White, bass player for Earth, Wind & Fire, Columbia did a Harvard study on black music. Clive followed the Harvard study in terms of the viability of black music. He really made black music his goal. By signing us, Philadelphia International, Bill Withers, and Herbie Hancock, Miles Davis was already on a label. They wanted to make a change. Mr. White said that since the 1920s and Bessie Smith, Columbia had not been successful with black music.
Okay, here we go. Now that's part one. Here we go. So part two, Ray Barnes, a successful record producer at the time, late 1980s,
mm-hmm.
suggests that there may have been a hidden agenda, really, behind the Harvard study. He speaks of a conversation he had with a top black executive associated with the study, Westbrook. I met with him, and he had just left the major company that he was working with, CBS. He said, I'm going to tell you something about this industry that will probably surprise you. He said, when I was working for the major company, they had me do a study on what it was that, and this is the trippy part, what it was that enabled black people to make the kind of music that they do.
Mm-hmm.
He said the industry realized that black people influenced 75 to 90% of all music made in America and in the world. So that meant that these people, black people, had the influence which influenced almost all music. The danger was, that was happening at this time was you had Motown, you had Sax, you had Sussex, you had these black record companies at that time who had the majority of the black acts.
A monopoly?
Oh, really?
Oh, my God, not a black
How
monopoly.
How can black pull that one off? He told me that CBS, Warner Brothers, Atlantic, Polygram, all of them got together to do the study. They wanted to find out what it is that makes black music what it is. Africa, okay? The idea is that if we can find, check this out, if we can find the ingredients, okay, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. fucking Hyde, if we can find the ingredients, then maybe we can make the music without the black people. Isn't that something?
You know why they never found it is because it's not only Africa, but it's Jamaica.
It's everything.
It's us. It's Haiti. It's all this other stuff.
Oh, my
all
God. Let me go. Then we won't have to have them. We can make the music ourselves. I love that. I really love that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Groups and artists such as the original Dixieland Jazz Band, Paul Whiteman, labeled the King of Jazz, Tommy Dorsey, labeled the King of Swing, Elvis Presley, promoted as the King of Rock and Roll, along with Pat Boone, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, the Osmonds, Kenny G, Herb Alpert, Dave Sanborn, Jeff Lorber, Tina Marie, Michael McDonald are only some of the white artists and groups who in the past or present played black music. While artists have been copying black music since the Spirituals, during the time of slavery, it was not until the 1970s that music by black artists was accepted as a stable financial endeavor. Evolving beyond the race records of the 1920s and the rhythm and blues records of the 50s, which were distributed mainly in black communities. It was around the time of the study that the record industry began to make heavy financial investments into black music, making more album commitments rather than singles, promoting it to top stations, investing more marketing dollars, and making stronger efforts in international distribution. Mr. Barnes concludes, so he said there their key then. If we cannot make black music without black people, then we must have a way of controlling the black industry. One way of doing this with the use of the study was to expose the techniques in which a successful black business such as Stax Records was operating. For example, when Al Bell, owner of Stax, read the study, he revealed this about his company's business operatives. The Harvard Report was an excellent study of our approach at Stax on operating a black phonograph record company in total. Prior to that study, our business methodology was unknown, so as a result of that, we had very little competition.
We're so happy we had it all.
Secrets.
Right. And now?
No one knew what we were doing. We were able to build a business at our own pace subsequent to revelations in that study.
And now the competition,
became much more intense. Oh, no shit. Not only did the competition proliferate, CBS flew Stax in order to stop the business agreement between Al Bell and Clive Davis, who was later fired from CBS. In effect, the suit served to legally exhaust Stax, a common corporate tactic used in battling an opponent in court. As a result, Stax was not financially able to compete with CBS in court and ultimately ceased doing business. Bell tried to fight back. He filed an antitrust suit against CBS for $67 million, alleging violation of the Sherman Patent Antitrust Act. Bell said, "We allege clandestine activities on their part to try to stop it. The agreement, that's all part of the court record. So I suppose it's fair to say, and I want to be really clear on this, I suppose it's fair to say that some of the people, the executives at CBS employed by CBS at the time, played a very significant role in the demise of Stax.
Oh, my goodness. Right. Wow. The drama of all of that.
Oh.
Do you realize, as you continue reading, I just want to make sure that I tell you, we have 8 minutes for our audience left.
We good.
Call us still, though, at 917-889-9946.
Okay. And I'm going to finish this. That way we don't have to take it in the next week.
All right. That's great.
Larkin Arnold, former senior vice president of artists. An artist repertoire, black music, CBS Records, and longtime veteran in the music business disagrees. I doubt anyone, any corporation, or any group of corporations made a concerted effort to extinguish black companies, black record companies. It is like any other aspect of business life. If a major corporation decides to enter in a market, it's only a very, very strong, smaller company that can survive, whether we're talking about mom-and-pop grocery stores or little gasoline stations. If Gulf comes in there, they're going for the market aggressively, in which they should do. If you can't compete, you're going to go by the wayside. We may never know the full effect of the demise of Stax Records. The suit against Solar Records, compounded with the purchase of Motown Records, had the development of black music or the desire to develop a full-service black-owned record company. Some things are evident. There is still not one. I think there is now. Right, with JC and all, I got to figure that out.
Oh, okay.
But basically, the deeper effect may not be just the control of black music, but control of black intellect and black culture. Since major record companies captured control of black music, especially the huge explosion of black youth music, rap and hip-hop, the proliferation of profanity and sexism against black women have enormously expanded. So-called conscious or meaningful black music seems to have faded in the background or garnered very little radio airplay. If there are no blues, jazz, reggae, and a very small handful of conscious commercial black music artists in America, there would be no substance or uniqueness in black music at all. If ever there is another research effort like the Harvard study, let the black record labels and radio station entrepreneurs get together with some black colleagues and develop not only sound business practices and self-defense in business, but explore how the ancient Africans in the Nile Valley built those great empires and use that as a template to do the same. Strong black-owned institutions are needed for the black music for the world is dancing to. If not, good, solid, meaningful black music may softly become a thing of the past. It has. Some feel that it already has happened. The generations to come may be left with some the same discussion many debate today. what happened to that really good black music of the 60s and 70s, or even the conscious rap of the 80s? And that is the end of that in the takeover.
And very good questions to answer, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
very
really
good.
I think it's very important.
Yeah.
We should be moguls in the industry and many others.
Well, yeah, when they said, you know, back in the day, we controlled 90% of the music.
You know,
what
will be a
industry?
Really interesting one to look up is hair care. You know, who owns most of the hair care for black Americans in the
city? Now, that's superficial. Hair care.
No, it's no more superficial than music.
No. Music? We own 90% of the industry before they screwed us. Hair care?
Yeah, they screwed, like, just, you know, black is different. Than, okay.
We all need to have
see,
friends.
Call in and say, call or write her and tell her that that's a legitimate thing.
Yeah,
well. To have the money of the products that we use on our hair to make it healthy, whose hands is it in?
Okay, well, the stoplight and all the other shit we invented that we don't get money for.
Right.
Okay, but we're talking about the music industry now. We're taking over.
I know.
And we're going to end this conversation with, you know what, black people? Like I said, how we started, we need to get our stuff together, and it's going to happen one person at a time. And I had this wonderful conversation with my daughter this weekend. And, you know, it's like families have to stick together, people have to stick together. And it's just sad that we don't, but we have to, and that's why we'll be speaking that every day. We'll be writing about that on the website all the time. We'll be playing that has that to do with it all the time. And we'll never give up on trying to do what's right for our people. So
right
this
on.
Week at the Association of African Brothers, we're going to begin online math tutoring.
Oh,
so,
wow, okay.
You know, we'll try to do that. But you know what? First of all, you got a kid to fail in math. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, you got a kid. So the Association of African American Single Mothers hopes to stop black apathy. I hope everybody goes out there. If you don't write or read the book, if you just go on the internet and look up Stop the Brainwash, and that will start to lead you in the right direction.
Do you have a link on AAASM.org?
No, because I have to get their permission, so I haven't done that. But they can go. There's no link. Go to my website to sign up. And, you know, meet us here every Sunday from 3 to 4. We love you. Everything I do is to educate my people, whether you like me or not. I don't really care. But, you know, I feel like I have a duty to my people, to my parents for the struggles that they've given me,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they fought on my behalf.
Right.
And it's important that I don't let them down, and I try not to do that. So this is the diary. This show's all about love. You guys have a wonderful. You want to say something?
See you next week.
That's all you want
well,
to say.
Well, I wanted to say stuff about Jesse Jackson and.
You love that man.
No. I mean,
he's already married,
oh,
but that don't make a difference.
He's like my dad's age.
Yeah. Okay. He's everybody's dad's age.
But anyways, you know, I will say something about it next week.
Okay. Have a good week. We love you, and God bless you, and bless Black America, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
See you next week.
Bye.
What are you laughing about,
Stacey?
You dancing to the music. You kill me.
Wow.
You like that song?
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
It is cool.
I like it. Got you into a nice groove.
Yeah, and it's free, so we ain't robbing nobody. So
I never.
That's always good.
I always have to kind of be doing something. That's why
All right, so that was kind of depressing, so I got to think of something light. Let's see. It'll be Easter. Oh, good. We can talk about resurrection.
I don't like Easter.
I don't like Easter.
Not really. Not particularly.
No?
But that's why. Tell me, why do you like Easter?
I do, because my mama told me I did.
Like, casseroles.
Well, yeah, that would be good. Could you make me one of those? I never had one.
An egg casserole?
Yeah. And I don't trust myself.
Make me one for Easter.
A day you don't like. Instead of Easter egg hunting, you make me an egg casserole before the show. All right, we'll see.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know what? We're going to have a good week next week.
Yeah.
I'll be positive.
It is Easter. Is it Easter next Sunday?
Yes, Easter.
Okay. You sound like my mother.
Oh, good.